everyone. Welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice from the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howell. And as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
We're cleaning out at Lifeway. Now, that doesn't mean people. Okay. That means that we're cleaning out paper and books.
Scared me.
Well, we're getting ready to consolidate into just a small part of Lifeway because we're going to sell the rest of the buildings. We've already got a contract on it. And I keep coming across all kinds of memorabilia. Mm-hmm. You got to see this card.
Okay.
Now you need to read read that card to the listeners.
The Rainer Group.
Yeah, that brings back memories of when did that thing? I came here in 2005.
Okay.
So that's when the Rainer Group shut down.
Okay.
So came across
Rock Bay Court. Is that the house?
That was the house address.
So you put your house address on the Rainer Group.
Thing. Yeah. Nobody ever came to the house looking for consultations though. But the Rainer Group, the old consultation thing. And I always wanted to start it back, but of course I have a contractual agreement with Lifeway that I want. So I'm really kind of pumped that we do podcasts and we do blogs and we do all kind of other things. And we'll even be talking about some others in the context of this show, and we'll talk about the length. But one of the things we want to begin to kind of preview is Church Answers.
Yes.
And Church Answers is a new offering that we have coming out. We've already got the videos, the preview videos online. You can link below this.
Just launched this week.
And it's a subscription ministry. And I am absolutely pumped about it because on the first of the month, they will be getting information called the Rainer Report.
Yes.
And the Rainer Report will be that, but it's, you know, what is it? It's going deeper into issues that we can only skim the surface in podcast and blog posts. And then in the second one, we have
Breaking Barriers.
And
that'll be next week's podcast. We'll talk a little bit more about that.
And it's going to be totally dedicated to breaking attendance barriers, maybe some on financial barriers and a few things like that. But we've had high demand for, hey, tell me how to break barriers in my church. And you can't do one podcast and you can't do one blog post on that. So that will drop on the 11th of every month, and they'll get that resource. And then on the 21st of every month, we will have Deeper Dive, where for those who want to read really a white paper, heavy research on a particular product accompanied by a recorded commentary on the research, but also the white paper itself. So three times a month, they're going to be getting this information from Church Answers. And you can find out a whole lot more about it. It's basically like having an ongoing consultation in your church every month, three times, 36 times a year.
Yeah.
Some very,
at
very
least
at least 36. Yeah, we may surprise you every now and then. And somebody may say, well, you know, what about the podcast and the blog and all that? We're going to continue to do that. No pulling back on that. But this is for those who really want to take their churches to the next level. And so kind of excited about that. And really what we're going to do on this podcast is just give a little taste of some of the things that we will be talking about in Church Answers. So I know that's a long preview, but let me also thank Vanderbloom and Search Group and William Vanderbloom and our sponsors. Always thankful for them and always thankful that we had this relationship with William and the Vanderbloom and Search Group. So now is the time that we go into one of these issues. And the issue is, Jonathan,
leading change.
Leading Change. That sounds like a book, like John Cotter wrote a book called Leading Change. Well, we're going to really focus this time. We will focus this time on the five most common mistakes church leaders make when they lead change.
Yeah.
Again, this is skimming the surface of what we'll be doing with Church Answers, but it's still some information that I think will be very helpful in this podcast.
Yeah.
So every leader in a church knows that their churches need to change. Every leader
at some point, maybe for the better, and hopefully for the better.
I think it's continuous. I think change is continual. You're anchored to the Word of God. That does not change. The gospel is constant. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. We know that that is the truth. But in terms of methodologies, in terms of cultural issues, change is a constant. And pastors and other staff want to lead in change, but they often make some common mistakes. And we're going to cover five of the most common mistakes church leaders make when leading change. Oh, by the way, you've been here three and a half years now. What is the biggest mistake I've made in leadership at Lifeway?
Not hiring me earlier.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. That was one of the most self-serving. I didn't even know you existed earlier.
That's a good point. Much less
hiring you earlier. Well, I gave him a softball, and he.
I don't know.
And
I
he mean, fanned it.
You put me on the spot here. I really don't know what it would be.
Well, I think that's a wonderful answer. Then you don't have to show all of the flaws of my leadership. You really do know, but you're just not going to tell the audience on a podcast. Let's go back to the five most common mistakes church leaders make when leading change.
Number one is the failure to earn trust.
Failure to earn trust takes T-I-M-E, time. And we have talked again and again about tenure. Mm-hmm. We've talked about pastors who leave usually before the third year. The latest information that we have is the average tenure of a pastor is 3.6 years. And in many churches, you don't really begin to earn trust until you have been there five plus years. Now, that's not true in every church.
Yeah.
If you're starting a new church, yeah, it is. It's an elastic number, and it means it can go both ways. Some pastors are able to earn trust in their first or second year. Most of them are not. Most of them have to go to year five before the congregation will say, you are our pastor. Yeah. So does that mean you shouldn't make any change in the first 5 years?
Not at all.
It does not, but it means you need to make measured change according to the trust that you think you have. We call it chips in our pocket and expenditures that we can make according to all the goodwill that we have accumulated. And so many times leaders, pastors specifically, but others on staff, will make this mistake where they are moving forward without really having the trust of the people.
When you say trust of the people, are you talking about the congregation as a whole or specifically leadership or a kind of a both and?
More of the former instead of the latter.
Okay.
I'm talking about the early adopters, those who will buy in to your change. There will be basically most congregations are one-third, one-third, one-third. Now that's again a rough number. Someone will ask me
Pascal's principle of thirds, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Or is it Napoleon?
Yeah, I think they both had principles of thirds, or maybe that's how we split the pie that particular night. So the principle of one-thirds is basically this. One-third of the congregation is eager to embrace change. On the other extreme, one-third will resist it just because it's change. And then there's the middle one-third that will just go along if it begins to go in a certain direction. So what the pastor or the other staff member needs to do is to get the buy-in, and we'll be talking about that actually in this particular podcast, from a group of leaders. Those group of leaders will then get the buy-in from the second one-third, and then the second one-third will be the barriers or the those things that can hold back the critics, the other one-third who will resist any change. So Earning that trust really begins with the pastor or other staff member getting the trust of some of the key leaders that have influence in the church.
What are the best ways that pastors can do that?
Conversations.
Yeah.
I know of one pastor that is just regularly taking key leaders to a meal or to coffee, and he asks this question, "Tell me what I need to know." Just simple as that. And he listens, and they know that he is listening to them. It's not a matter of some great strategy or some brilliant idea. He's just saying, tell me what I need to know. I want to listen to you because I know you're an influencer in the church.
The second mistake that church leaders typically make when leading change is that they don't understand the right pace. We've kind of talked about this a little bit, touched on it a little bit already.
Well, you need to take change at the right pace. Many, many years ago, my third published book was called Eating the Elephant. And we've talked about it on the podcast before. And how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? Mm-hmm. Well, here's what to continue the metaphor. By the way, did you hear the chapel where I did the mixed metaphors that my wife, Nellie Jo,
loved those.
It didn't get many laughs in chapel.
I laughed.
Well, you should have laughed louder because there weren't that many people laughing at that particular time.
I was still in awe of the organ music that day.
Oh, yeah. That was the first time we've had organ music in our chapel. It certainly was. So we've got this eating the elephant, the metaphor. And the question then is, how fast do you eat the elephant? You know that you eat the elephant one bite at a time, but how fast do you eat? And at which part of the elephant do you begin eating? And the metaphor could continue on and on.
I would say as fast as you can chew.
Yes, as fast as you can chew, but at the same time, not so fast that the elephant decides to sit on you and kill you.
I wonder what elephant tastes like.
You know, is elephant...
We've really devolved. We've really gone off here. Is it more like chicken?
It's more like chicken. Yeah.
It's either chicken or beef.
It can be white.
It's gamey.
It's white meat and dark meat, and skin's a little bit tough, but you can peel it off. I've never had elephant before. I don't know what you're talking about. So, going back to the topic, Jonathan.
Yes.
We only have 22 to 23 minutes on this podcast, and now we've already talked about Nellie Jo and her mixed metaphors and elephants. The right pace of change means that you are going at a pace that you know is pushing the congregation, but at the same time not pushing them so hard that they are resisting. One of the little sayings that I like to talk about leadership, true leadership is staying in front of the people, but not so far in front of the people that they mistake you for the enemy and shoot you in the rear.
Yes.
How do you determine that? That's wisdom. That's intuition. Yeah. That's speaking to have people speaking into you that you trust. It's no magic formula, but you should be asking that question. What is the right pace of change?
And that kind of goes back to what you talked about in the first point. It was communication.
That's right. Communication, ongoing communication, receiving communication, asking the questions.
Yeah, and communication is not just the pastor or the leader telling the church or the ministry, this is what we're going to do. It's also listening and receiving that feedback. And it's a two-way street.
And here's the good news. The more the leader listens, the more he or she earns trust. Hmm. So that goes back to number one, failure to earn trust.
The third most common mistake is the failure to articulate the need and the urgency.
Spoke with a pastor about a year or two ago, and he really could see the need for a major capital need in the church. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into the details of that because there are a lot of church members that would know if I gave the specificity of the capital need. But he himself saw it. He was well supported in the church. Mm-hmm. He was well loved in the church. And so they presented the building program, the building proposal. And it probably would have gotten a 95% vote, but he sensed something. He sensed that they were willing to do this, but only because they had a love for him and a respect for him.
Yeah. They didn't see the need or the urgency for the capital program. They were doing it more of out of duty than delight.
Well, that's a pretty good phrase, Jonathan, more out of duty than delight. And so what did the leader do? He withdrew the proposal. He backed away, which I thought was extremely wise because he had not communicated well. Now, in 2020 hindsight, he understands. He had not communicated what would happen if we don't do this. Mm-hmm. What are the consequences? What's the urgency? What's the need? And many times leaders will go into some type of leadership initiative, and they will not say, this is the need. This is the urgency. If we don't do this, then this will happen.
Yeah.
I don't want to mix my leadership at Lifeway too much with what happens in the local church because they are significantly different and the needs are different. But I will speak in chapel and I will say these types of things. If we don't make these changes, then we will die.
Yeah.
Now that's a pretty urgent need.
Yeah.
That's a sense. And I'm saying, look all around us. Look at Family Christian Stores that just declared bankruptcy. Berean no longer exists. We bought out what was left of them. And I could go on and
Borders,
on. And on. Yes.
Other things like that.
Everything. And I say, if we don't change, then we will die. And so that's the urgency I put. And again, I'm not talking about the self-existence of an institution. I'm talking about an organization that will continue to glorify God. And so pastors need to do the same. Staff members need to do the same. Why are we making this change? Not simply we are going to make this change, but why are we making this change?
Number four is the failure to form an informal alliance.
Yeah, this is one thing that many leaders miss. There are key influencers in every church. Mm-hmm. Some of them have positional influence, like they have leadership in the elders or the deacons or in small groups or something like that. Some of them do not.
Every time I hear about this, I think about John Maxwell and his 21-year irrefutable laws and the what he talks about, Claude.
I forgot about Claude.
Yeah.
I've heard many stories about how influential Claude was, and so he would always go to Claude to get his buy-in and to hear from him before the rest of the congregation. Because if Claude said yes, the congregation said yes. Mm-hmm. There may be one Claude in the church. There may be four or five of those same types of influencers. And so you need to form this informal alliance. Now, here's the question. What if the informal alliance disagrees with you?
That's a good question, actually.
Yeah, that is a good. That's probably a sign that you're not ready to move forward with the initiative.
You haven't communicated the right need and urgency.
You took the words out of my mouth. So, yeah, exactly. You've got to form these informal alliances, and until the point that these influence leaders have bought in, it is not time to make the change.
The fifth and final most common mistake church leaders make when leading change is they do not launch new initiatives as a trial run.
Launching something as a trial run can take a lot of the fear out of the change that is about to take place.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are some things that you cannot do as a trial run. No. We're going to build a $6 million facility, and if it doesn't work, hey,
we'll just tear it down.
Obviously, those types of things do not work. No. There are two ways. There are two ways that you can branch off on this. One is if it can be a true trial run. Let's give an example here. Let's say that a church leader is running. The church is running out of small group space, and they all meet on campus right now. And instead of increasing the capacity and paying for a capital project, instead of doing that, they want to look at possibly doing home groups. Mm. So what the leader might say is, let's move half of our home groups to homes or other places off campus, and let's evaluate it in 6 months. If it doesn't work, then we'll know we have to do a capital project to build essentially education space. So that's a good way to talk about doing a trial run. But there's another branch of it.
Okay.
Another branch of it is what's called bullet test. Many times when we do changes, we use the shotgun approach, and we just blow everything out there, and we have to
see what we hit.
Yeah. Well, not only see what we hit, but we're doing everything at once. There's a bunch of pellets going out instead of one single bullet. A bullet test means we're going to try something, and we're going to try it on a small scale. I realize I'm using my hands, and nobody's actually seeing me do that. But that's
fantastic gestures, by the way.
Yeah, keep on commenting on how I'm moving my hands. So put my hand down. So you do a bullet test by trying something on a small scale. I know that at Lifeway, we do bullet tests quite a bit. If it fails, there's not been a lot of expenditures. There's not been a lot of mistrust because you did something that failed. And it is a way to in the church just to try to do something that is simple, concise, with little risk.
Yeah.
For example, let's go back to the case that I just gave.
Yeah, the home groups.
The home groups. Instead of saying half of the people go to now home groups or off-campus groups, instead of doing that, let's try two of them. Let's see what their response is. And maybe then after 6 months, if it's going well, we can put another two groups out there. That's more of the branch of bullet testing than trial runs. Many times, pastors and other leaders in churches are so determined that the change that they see is needed, that they move in such a massive way, in such a quick way, that they're doing things that really scare people. And fear is the last thing you need when you're trying to initiate change. So when it's all said and done, this whole idea of bullet test or trial runs is absolutely critical to initiating change in the church.
Going back to your example of the home groups going off campus, the bullet test. If you do the first two, you're probably going to learn a lot of things from that.
That's another purpose of a bullet test.
So you don't have 20 groups, so to speak, going out there all at once without any trial or test, that bullet test. You can, if you pace them out two at a time, you probably learn things like if you have, say they're adult groups. A young adult group is going to be a lot different than a senior adult group or a middle-aged group. There'll be different things that you'll learn from those different small groups going off campus.
Okay, that's good. Now, I got a question for you.
Oh, boy. You're asking me questions. Now, that's not how this works.
No, if you don't know the answer, that's okay, because it can show that you're lacking knowledge, and I have knowledge. So
great.
So here's the question. What if the change is a massive capital project, and there's no way to do it incrementally? How do you do a bullet test, or how do you do a trial run with those massive amount of expenditures?
I don't know, but I bet you do.
I bet I do, and I'm so glad that you don't, so I can respond that I do know. What you do is you find out from other churches that have done it. That is your trial run.
Well, that would have been my my guess. Sure. But I'm trying to think of how you do that in the church. So.
Yeah, well.
You just realize you just asked yourself a question on your own podcast, right?
I know that, and you realize you could not answer it because you refused to think. You refused to think.
I didn't want to be wrong.
You refused to think outside the box. You were thinking within the paradigmatic reality of we've got to do it in the church.
Yeah.
So you then go to another place that has done it, and you talk to them about their trials, not their trial run, but their problems, their issues, their challenges, what went right, what went wrong, and you use them for your trial run. That's common sense, but I think that that might be a question that would come up when we look at the five most common mistakes
that make. Also a reason that you go and select architects and design firms that do what you're wanting, not just maybe a random person in the community or somebody who maybe works in the church. You go out and get a professional church design or church build firm that has the loads of experience in exactly what you're doing instead of somebody who you just happen to know.
We have a great relationship with the design build firm out of Pensacola in the Pensacola area called Costco, and Tim Songster is actually the person who owns Revitalized Churches for so much of what we do. And design build firms are organizations that have been through the architectural process. They've been through the building process. They've been through the project manager process. And when they can come back and tell the stories of what's worked and what's not, that's an incredible help for a trial run. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be another church. You're exactly right. It can be another organization that has done it.
And Costco is just one of many. I mean, that's just one that we happen to know personally.
Yes.
But there are many of those out there. Visioneering, I know.
Visioneering, which is a Lifeway organization, is doing an incredible job. I love the work that they're doing in this whole realm of facilities. And they do more than facilities. Yeah. They do a whole lot more than that. So just to say that there are different choices out there, and that can help you through this launching a new initiative process.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Vanderbloom and Search Group. They're the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderbloom and Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com. That'll do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
So we've talked about leading change, and we've just sliced a little bit. It's like peeling back an onion. We just gotten one layer, and we've peeled it back. It kind of makes me tear up just to think about that. And we've talked about some of the problems, mistakes church leaders have, failure to earn trust, not understanding the right pace, failure to articulate the need and the urgency, failure to form an informal alliance and not launching new initiatives as a trial run or a bullet test. And having said that, the reason we're doing Church Answers is because we get talking about some topic and then time is up.
Yeah.
And Church Answers is going to be delivered three times a month at a minimum. The 1st, the 11th, and the 21st. It's going to be an exciting new initiative. And you have all of the information that we need in order, or that our audience needs in order to learn more about it.
Yeah, and there's a free 3-video series on leading change right now available over at churchanswers.com that folks can go over and view. All it takes is just a couple of mouse clicks on the website here, and you'll be over to Church Answers and watching those videos right away.
Sounds great.
Thanks for joining us today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.